And you are listening to Out There. It is Tuesday, June 2nd, 2020. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. For today's show, from 3 until 4, we have... I got a clip from the rally outside the Springfield Police Station last Friday in support of Black Lives. I've got an interview. Actually, Kelly Juno interviewed me. Kelly's a third grade teacher at Bridge Street Elementary School and guides the environmental club. And we're talking about trash and trash reduction and stuff. And, Now I remember what I was going to do for my show today. And I somehow on the last, between this morning and this afternoon, when I was out working, it slipped my mind. First, I have a very brief clip from today's out working. So, South Street, I ride it every Tuesday, back and forth, hauling trash to Valley Recycling. And I noticed the roadkill, animals killed trying to cross the street. Lately, I've seen a couple turtles this week. Like, can you imagine being a turtle and trying to cross the street? On one side of the street is Arcadia Nature Preserve. On the other side of the street, maybe it continues, not sure. So when I'm working during the day, you know, I gotta pee, and so I just go over the side of the embankment. But I noticed that if I go on the swamp side of the street, the mosquitoes swarm me. If I go on the other side of the slope, on the other side of the street, the mosquitoes aren't so bad. I mean, like, it's like the traffic here is so bad that even the mosquitoes can't cross the street. All right, I guess I should count my blessings, huh? Oh, I remember back in the good old days when all I worried about was mosquitoes. All right, so here's a clip from the rally in Springfield Friday to raise awareness about George Floyd, well, police brutality, violence, all kinds of violence against people of color, black people. And what can I say about these clips? So I was there with some friends and my friend Lingan, he was like, you should interview some people. I'm like, oh, this is kind of a tough place because it's like really intense. It was an intense event, just like a lot of feelings, you know, a lot of centuries, the weight of centuries exploding again. And so there were, it was a little bit difficult to you know, interrupt people, but there were a couple of women that I had my eye on that I was like, oh, I really want to interview them. They seem just like really intensely present, but it took me a long time of watching them and lingering until I finally found a break when I heard them say something logistical to each other. And anyway, so there's a few people here that I talked to, and I guess I'll let them do the talking.
Why you're here?
For George Floyd.
Yeah. Why are you here today?
Justice for George Floyd and to start abolishing the terrible criminal law system we have.
How about you? Why are you here today?
Yeah, I came with them. I didn't really know.
To support
too.
Because I'm a teacher, I'm a member of Springfield, and this is not right, and I'm here to use my privilege to help others.
Anything else?
I'm good right now. Yeah. Thank you. I'm just really emotional.
I wonder if y'all want to share how you feel about being here today.
very emotional. It's very emotional.
I've already wiped tears away.
Yeah.
And it's black, all lives matter. We know this. But right now, people of color seem to be hunted down and murdered. And they've got the permission of our president to do this. And no one seems to care. No one seems to care. And it's like, we don't want violence. We just want to be able to work and live and be happy like everybody else. But the color of our skin seems to be an automatic death sentence. And it's not just men. It's children. It's women. When will it stop? We're all God's children. But we've been devalued from day one, and it's never going to end. Unfortunately, George Floyd will not be the last one. He won't be. He won't be. There's nobody to protect any of us. And if one of us is in jeopardy, we all are. So that's why we have to come together, not only as God's children, but as a community and as a nation. We have got to start somewhere. We have no leadership. It's got to come from us. Just stand up. Stand up.
We're America's people.
Your relatives have probably been here way before mine ever came.
Yeah. Well, it makes no difference. We're all here. We pay taxes.
Yeah.
We work. We go to church. We believe in God. But we can't do anything anymore. You can't walk in the park. You can't drive your car.
That's the hardest part.
How do you tell? How do I tell my 15-year-old grandson? Okay, I'm trying to let him know you love everybody. You take people for how your interaction is with them, not by the color of their skin. But yet, to him, I'm telling a lie. Because he sees what's going on. It is. It's hurtful. Or I get on an elevator and a little old lady grabs her purse and stands to the side. You know, I'm a nurse. Been a nurse for over 30 years. And back in the day when I first started, there weren't that many nurses of color. There was so much discrimination. So much. I've seen a lot. And I'm just too tired. I'm tired. I buried my son 8 months ago from natural causes. And every day of his life, I had to worry. Anytime he left the house, would that be the last time I saw him? He was tall, but he was a gentle giant. 6'5", 300 and some odd pounds. Every day, I had to pray the blood of Jesus over him. I said, Lord, please just protect him. And he wouldn't hurt a fly. He wouldn't hurt a fly. Fear breeds contempt. I've gotten pulled over so many times working in Long Meadow, Wilbraham. I've gotten pulled over so many times. Stethoscope around my neck. Uniform on. What did she say?
He just got charged with murder unless she's talking about the police officer.
They killed him. Is that what she said? Is that what she... Yep. Yep, that was his third degree murder. We gotta start somewhere. Thank God. That's just the beginning.
They charged him with third degree?
Hold on, let me see.
You got charged though?
Yeah, third degree murder.
Just the
and
one?
Manslaughter.
Him and? Excellent.
George, police, it says one police officer.
One, so far.
Yep. It's rather new, y'all.
We got,
it just happened. It just
gotta
happened.
Start somewhere.
Yeah, thanks a lot for sharing. I just hope that like more sharing would just like motivate people, especially white people, to be like to speak up. You know,
yeah.
I really appreciate it.
Silence equals support. It does.
Yeah, we're in this together.
Yeah, we are. God bless you.
Me too. And that was clips from the Black Lives Matter rally in Springfield last Friday. Whenever I'm trying to look at the calendar, figure out what the date was. Well, the Friday before the 2nd of June, 2020. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I didn't get the names of any of the people in those interviews, but I'm really grateful to the people for sharing, especially the last woman. And if you're not sure what to do and money is a resource that you have, consider donating to, or not really donating, but putting money giving money, sending money to the Western Mass Surges Reparations Campaign. You can find more information about that at the Western Mass Surge website, Facebook page, Surge, S-U-R-J, showing up for racial justice. There's many great places you can donate to. Thanks to C4C for a Black Lives Matter donation. Also, I want to announce coming up Friday, June 5th, that's this Friday, in Chicopee is a car rally at the Hampton County Jail. It's Friday at 3, meeting at the AMF Chicopee Lanes Bowling Alley. It's a car rally for decarceration, for testing, communication rights, and release at the Hampton County Jail. This is organized by Decarcerate Western Mass. If you want to be involved with any planning or decarceration efforts with this group, just you can email decarceratewesternmass@gmail.com or check out their Facebook page. Next, something that the woman said in the interview, in the last interview, about how her son died of natural causes, what I was really thinking was, how natural are natural causes when we have such huge disparities in the healthcare system and, you know, all across the board of from birth to death and resources available to white people versus people of color. And now I think I'll play, let me play Eddie Grant.
Living on Don't you know, you're talking about a revolution that sounds like a whisper. Don't you know, you're talking about a revolution that sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines. Sitting around, waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, they're talking about a revolution. It sounds like a whisper. Poor people gonna rise up and get their share. Poor people gonna rise up and take what's theirs. Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run, 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 run. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution, oh, oh no. Talking about a revolution, oh, oh, while they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know you're talking about a revolution? It sounds. Are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution. Oh, no. Talking about a revolution. Oh, no. Talking about a revolution. Oh, no.
Yeah, if you want to get involved in the revolution here in Northampton, the city's annual budget hearing is tomorrow, Wednesday, from 5 to 7, and Thursday from 7 to whenever. Well, I guess, yeah, it starts Wednesday at 5 and Thursday at 7. And these are public hearings where on Wednesday, each of the five departments, the police, Central Services, DPW, schools, and fire ambulance will each do a presentation for the public, and they'll field questions from the public. So if you have thoughts on how money should be prioritized in the city, the hearings are going to be online, virtual, or something like that. You can go to the city's website. You can also, if you live in Northampton, call your city councilor if you have questions, or either of the at-large counselors. We're going to try and set up I and anyone else that can get to help, a housemate or two maybe, are going to try to set up on the bike path where we live in Florence, a weather permitting, a projector screen to project the city, the presentations, so people going by on the bike path can attend outside with a large screen It'll be just like going to the movies, you know? So, yeah, that's tomorrow, Wednesday at 5. And then and Thursday at 7 is the regular city council meeting. But, I mean, the regular city council meeting time. But the hearings on the budget will continue. And my housemate, Alex Jarrett, he's a city councilor for Ward 5 here in Florence. But I think he was saying that by law, at this point in how the budget works, you can't decide, you can't give more money to something. You can only take away money. Anyway, here's something I've been wanting to play. This is Maya Angelou talking about We Wear the Mask.
I have written a poem for a woman who rides a bus in New York City. She's a maid. She has two shopping bags. When the bus stops abruptly, she laughs. If the bus stops slowly, she laughs. If the bus picks up someone, she laughs. If the bus misses someone, she So I watched her for about 9 months. I thought, Now, if you don't know black features, you may think she's laughing. But she wasn't laughing. She was simply extending her lips and making a sound. I said, oh, I see. That's that survival apparatus. Now, let me write about that to honor this woman who helps us to survive. By her very survival, Miss Rosie, through your destruction, I stand up. So I use the poem with Mr. Paul Lawrence Dunbar's poem, Masks, and my own poem for old black men. Mr. Dunbar wrote Masks in 1892. We wear the mask that grins and lies. It shades our cheeks and hides our eyes. This debt we pay to human guile. With torn and bleeding hearts, we smile and mouth with myriad subtleties. Why should the world be overwise in counting all our tears and sighs? Nay, let them only see us while we wear the mask. We smile, but oh my God, our tears to thee from tortured souls arise. And we sing, hey, baby, baby, we sing, hey. But oh, the clay is vile beneath our feet and long the mire. But let the world think otherwise. We wear the mask. When I think about myself, I almost laugh myself to death. My life has been one great big joke, a dance that's walked, a song was spoke. I laugh so hard, I almost choke when I think about myself. 70 years in these folks' world, the child I works for calls me girl. I say, yes, ma'am, for working's sake. I'm too proud to bend and too poor to break. So I laugh until my stomach ache when I think about myself. My folks can make me split my side. I laugh so hard. I nearly died. The tales they tell sound just like lying. They grow the fruit but eat the rind. I laugh until I start to cry when I think about myself and my folks and the little children. My fathers sit on benches, their flesh count every plank. The slats leave dents of darkness deep in their withered flank, and they nod like broken candles, all waxed and burnt profound. They say, but sugar, it was our submission that made your world go round. There in those pleated faces I see the auction block, the chains and slavery's coffles, the whip and lash and stock. My father's speaking voices that shred my fact and sound. They say, but sugar, it was our submission and that made your world go round. They laughed to shield their crying. They shuffled through their dreams they step and fetched a country and wrote the blues in screams. I understand their meaning. It could and did derive from living on the ledge of death. They kept my race alive by wearing the mask.
Sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit. But my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Ooh, some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs, redemption songs. Yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our mind. Oh, have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop at the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Yes, some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs. All I ever have, redemption songs. These songs of freedom, songs of freedom.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP 103.3 FM in Northampton. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. That was Bob Marley, and before that, Maya Angelou with We Wear the Mask. And I'm here with you on Out There until 4 o'clock today. Madness Radio comes up at 4. Next, I have an interview with Kelly Juno, who's a third grade teacher at Bridge Street School here in Northampton. Kelly is actually interviewing me. And so this, I was speaking, you know, for third graders in this interview. It's probably, I'm not going to make any excuses. Here it is. We're talking about trash and federal people. They want to this interview is for third graders in the environmental club. So Kelly had a bunch of questions about, the work that I do hauling trash as part of Pedal People.
So we're here, I'm here with Ruthie, who is from the Pedal People, and she is going to talk to us today about trash, amongst some other things. So Ruthie, can you start by talking about the Pedal People and what they do and how long they've been in existence? And also, I know that it's a worker-owned co-op, so can you talk about that as well?
Yeah, so Pedal People is a trash hauling business. We haul trash by bicycles. My friend Alex and I started it together in 2002. So I'm just laughing because I'm remembering once when we were doing a presentation to second graders at Smith Campus School, and they said, "How long have you been around?" And I said, "Since 2002." And they said, "Whoa, you've been doing that since before I was even born." So I imagine it'll be the same for your students. So that's like 18 years, if you're good at math. And we started just hauling our own trash and recycling by bicycle with bike trailer to the transfer center in Northampton. And I moved here in 2002. I didn't have work. Alex was doing computer work, and he didn't want to work full-time on a computer. He wanted more variety in his work. He loved to bike. Neither of us had a car. We were used to using bikes and trailers. We were hauling our own stuff. And so we thought, well, maybe we can make a living hauling other people's trash and recycling. And so that was kind of the idea. We were also inspired by some people in Iowa that did a similar thing. And it's actually the people that make the bike trailers that we use. And they had written a book saying how to make a living, a book about how to make a living on a bicycle. And that helped us, our vision a little bit too. Anyway, so that was 2002. When Alex and I started, we knew that we never wanted to be anybody's boss. The idea of being a worker cooperative was always important to us. So we knew we wanted to be a cooperative or operate cooperatively. We had no idea if the business would even work, honestly. But we just figured we would try it and see how it goes. We started in December because that's when we were ready. But we also didn't know what winter would be like. I had biked through winters, but I'd never tried to haul a trailer with 300 pounds of trash in it during the winter. As it turns out, it's pretty doable, unless you're in the middle of an actual snowstorm. In that case, we'll delay, just like the trucks will delay. So we weren't sure when we started the business if it would work or not, but we started slowly. We didn't have any debt or any big expenses because we were just using a bicycle and our bodies. So it's not like we had to borrow money to buy a truck. It's not like we had to pay for, expensive repairs and licenses and gas and things like that. Our expenses were very low. So as we got more customers, then we got more friends joined us to do the work, and there was never any pressure to make a lot of money fast. Plus, hauling trash, you find lots of things that people throw away, so that cuts down on your expenses too. So other friends joined us, and we became an official worker cooperative in 2006, I think. So there's no boss in Pedal People. Sometimes when I'm picking up trash, people will say something to me like, "Oh, I hope they pay you good for that." And I'm like, by they, do you mean the customers? Or do you mean are you thinking like maybe there's a boss who's paying me? Because the customers are who are paying me. It's a sort of a different mentality than I think we're used to in this culture to imagine a business or an organization without someone in charge or someone saying how it's done or some kind of hierarchy. And I think Pedal People has about 22 worker owners, members now. So there's no boss, but we have different subcommittees, and people volunteer to be on different committees, whatever interests them. So these committees, the committees each have power, certain amounts of power, and we decide as a group what powers each committee has. So there's that sort of like organizational structure. But it's a constant process trying to figure out who do you talk to about what, and how do you decide what can you decide on your own. Like if I'm on the equipment committee, can I decide that we need to buy a new trailer? Or can the equipment committee decide that we need to spend $1,000 for a new trailer and some supplies? Or do we have to get everyone's permission? Things like that. It's just a process of figuring out. But I think that being a cooperative where we're each our own boss is really important to our feeling of freedom and happiness and our success as a business. No one's telling me to go ride my bike in the snow on a cold winter day and pick up trash. No, I want to be there doing that. Yeah.
Great. So can you talk about what it's like to pick up people's trash, and what have you learned from picking up people's trash?
Well, I will say that it's part-time work. I wouldn't want to pick up people's trash 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. I don't think I'd want to do anything really 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. But picking up people's trash, one of the things I enjoy about it is what you learn about society and culture. I've seen people throw away more than other people can ever hope to have. And it's kind of heartbreaking. Big questions as to why that is. I was a dumpster diver before I became a professional trash hauler. So I've always been like a scavenger, always been wanting to make use of something that someone else thinks isn't useful. Partly for the challenge of it, and partly because as someone who wants to live lightly on the earth, consumer choices affect everything around us. They affect the planet and the health of the planet, the life of the planet, and trying to make responsible consumer choices takes a lot of work, a lot of study, education. So I take a shortcut and just get what I need out of the trash. hauling people's trash. I've always grown up doing a lot of manual labor and being athletic, so I love the physical part of it. That really makes me feel alive. I enjoy the treasure hunting part of it, except for the heartbreak part where it's like, why do we mine this clay out of the ground and then have cats poop in it and then throw it away? And a bucket of cat litter weighs like, I don't know, it's like 60 pounds or I don't know, 30 pounds. I don't know how many pounds it is. But being able to feel with my muscles the weight of everything that's thrown away and knowing that that's going on my trailer and I have to pedal it up that hill, it really makes me want to like reduce the amount of trash that people throw away. I often think about how everything that is bought eventually gets thrown away. Almost everything.
Oh, I interrupted my own interview there. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm talking with Kelly Juno, who's a third grade teacher at Bridge Street School in Northampton and head of the environmental club there.
Everything. I've read that most consumer items, within 6 months of the time they're bought, they're thrown away. And I can tell you, as a trash hauler, I have seen boxes that consumer items come in, like, I don't know, like a salad shooter or something, or maybe a toy of some sort, plastic toy of some sort. I've seen the box because it's gone through the paper recycling, and then within a year, I've seen the item, the toy, the gadget being thrown away. That's why that is. Why we buy so many things we don't need. That's a big question. Yeah. But I think it has a lot to do with our minds getting warped. And greed. That's a big question. But dumpster diving, we'll talk about that. That's a smaller thing, easier to talk about. So I first started thinking about treasures being in people's trash when I was like 17. It was my first year of college, and I lived in a college dorm. And at the end of the hall, there was a trash can and a recycling bin for aluminum cans. At that time, that was like early 90s. There was no other kind of recycling, but there was this recycling bin for aluminum. And aluminum is the most recyclable, has the most value as a recycled item. It takes like the equivalent of half of a pop can, or it saves like half a pop can's worth of gasoline or petroleum to, if you recycle an aluminum can versus throwing it away. The bauxite mines where they make the aluminum, that's all pretty intense process. Anyway, so aluminum is very valuable as a material. And my dorm mates would often throw away their aluminum cans in with the trash, even when the recycling bin was right there. I was like, oh, people don't do that. And so I would go pick the aluminum cans out of the trash and put them in the recycling. And when I was doing that, I'd be like, oh, look, there's a bag of half-eaten popcorn. I like popcorn. Like, oh, whoa, look, someone put this pot in there that had something burned on the bottom. I have some steel wool. I can scrub that pot. Oh, someone threw out that t-shirt because it had a stain on it. All my clothes are already stained. Anyway, so that's sort of how I started thinking about, whoa, there's a lot of treasures in the trash. When I was living in Chicago, I lived there about 9 years and would ride my bike everywhere. I would often bike through the alleys instead of the main roads. And in the alleys where the garbage cans were, I would find all kinds of things. Everything I needed for my household, basically. Yeah. There's different kinds of dumpster diving. Also, at that time, I would go dumpster diving behind some grocery stores because many grocery stores would throw out food that was out of date or that had damaged packaging, even though it was still totally good. And if people had bought the same food and they put it in their fridge, like if you buy a loaf of bread, you might eat it for a few days afterwards, but the bakery can only sell it like for one day afterwards if it's like that kind of bakery. So that's how I started thinking, getting a lot of food out of the trash. Yeah.
Great. Thanks. So can you talk to us about where trash goes, both locally and then finally, where does it end up?
Yeah. So when Petal People picks up trash, we take it either to Locust Street, the city's transfer center by Smith Vocational, or we take it to Valley Recycling, a transfer center between Northampton and East Hampton. And those two places, they take it to different places. Basically they take it to the place where they can get the cheapest disposal costs. And I don't know about right now. The last time I asked the city where trash was going, it was either going to a landfill in Seneca Falls, New York, which is about 278 miles away. It's all trucked there. Or to Bondi's Island to incinerator in Springfield. And both of these places, I need to do more research, but I think both of these places like put an unfair burden on the people who live there, or people who used to live there but lost their land. At Bondi's Island in Springfield, typically incinerators are put in poor neighborhoods where residents don't have the money and resources to fight off an incinerator. So people who can least afford the toxins and stuff tend to suffer the most from our trash.
An incinerator burns trash, right?
Yeah, so an incinerator burns trash. In my mind, there's really no good solution. I mean, I don't know that one thing is better or worse than the other. They're both terrible. So, and the recycling, most of the recycling that we pick up, it goes to the transfer centers, and then it's trucked to Springfield, where there's a couple of recycling sorting facilities. And from those facilities, depending on what the material is, it will go to some buyback company. Could be some company making carpet in North Carolina from plastic. It could be a paper board manufacturer in Fitchburg, Massachusetts. Most of the paper in the United States goes to China, I think, to make boxes. So then they box things that they sell back to us, and they ship it back to us. So the ships come across the Pacific with shoes and toys and these cardboard boxes, and then we, instead of the ships going back empty, they take this paper recycling back to China. And China was taking most of our plastic recycling, but they got tired of taking our trash because a lot of it was trash. And like the whole recycling industry, that has a lot of toxins and things too, and reprocessing things, trucking things. There was some students, I think, from MIT who did a project putting the GPS trackers in a piece of trash, and then they were able to follow... No, I think it was a piece of recycling. They were able to follow where these things went. What is the trail of recycling in the United States? And the things travel sometimes thousands of miles before they're made into something else. And even that process of chipping, shredding, melting, all that is really energy intensive. We like to call recycling, in Petal People, sometimes we call recycling glorified trash. The trash is pretty terrible, but recycling is kind of just not quite as bad usually. Yeah.
So that kind of gets to my next question, which is, why do you think we create so much trash? What do you think it would take for humans to create less trash or no trash?
Things that come to mind immediately are, we like convenience, and we also tend to think short term. We like other people to think well of us, and there's a lot of cultural pressure. This is where I mentioned before, like, our minds are warped. Like, we want to have things. We think that having things will make us be respected. Or make people like us. I think that's part of it. Or, like, you know, we see this advertising and we think something's going to make us happy.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. You've been listening to an interview, Kelly Juno interviewing me. This interview is for her third graders at Bridge Street School. So that's what I was explaining, what an incinerator is and some things like that, because the kids may not have heard of those things. There's more to that interview, but I think I'm going to save it for another time. Well, I want to play it at some point, because this is when Kelly starts asking me about wealth inequality and all that. So I get to talk about, slavery and land seizings by one of the Europeans and wealth being passed on. Oh, that reminds me. I have a little poem that I wrote this week. I think I wrote it after the rally in Springfield, the Black Lives Matter rally. And it was just a little tiny little poem I wrote. And after thinking about it all day at the bike lab, and then I was like, okay, I got to write something to send out to this listserv. It's a One Family Farm. It's a Trinidad listserv. Anyway, it's like texting poem, very brief, because I was just kind of like trying to put it in a WhatsApp text. And it is Bones Break, Hearts Ache, Wealth is Passed On in Wills with Hate. One family, one day, our wills create. And back to the, I was going to say something more about the conversation, the interview with Kelly and me. I was talking a lot about personal choices. There's a lot of things that I haven't said yet in the interview, and that I wasn't on the best game yesterday when we were talking, but I also want to mention planned obsolescence. Yeah, planned obsolescence. That's a big reason that we buy more things, because the things we buy break, and they're made to break. They intentionally break, and they're marketed as disposable because the manufacturers want to sell us more. Go capitalism. So, my antidote to that is, have you smelled the black locust trees in bloom? Oh, the black locust blossoms. Sometimes they're hard to smell because the flowers are kind of high up there. But sometimes you can get a good whiff, and it's heavenly. The black locust trees are the ones that they're kind of scraggly, craggly. They grow all along the bike path. They got deeply ridged bark. They're, how to describe them? The leaves are very small and oval. Black locust trees have like bright green oval leaves. What they look like, I'm trying to think of something in a similar category. I don't know all those biology terms, but they got a stem and they got leaves on the left and the right. Oh, that's not a very good description. Honey locust trees, you see those planted downtown, like on Strong Ave, Pearl Street. There's lots of honey locust trees, street trees down there. But the honey locust trees, their leaves are more dark green and a little bit more ripply around the edges. The black locust tree leaves, they're maybe, I want to say maybe half an inch to an inch long, a whole bunch of little leaves on a tree. And when the wind blows about these days, the last few days, when the wind blows in our house, it sounds like it's pouring rain, but it's actually the wind blowing the black locust flower buds off, and they're landing on our roof. There's lots of cottonwood snow and black locust blossoms all over the ground right now, all over town. The little white petal things. And the blackberry blossoms, too. Yeah, I've been noticing that because I'm thinking about July. I'm noticing the blackberry blossoms right now and thinking, I got to come back here in July and see if there's blackberries to eat, because I love blackberries. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Stay tuned for Madness Radio coming up at 4. You can listen to archived editions of Out There at weatherbeard.com/out there. I was thinking recently and then noticing when I was editing the interview with me and Kelly, how, do you know how like women tend to say a statement and then raise their voice at the end as if it's a question? Well, that actually was a question. And I think part of that is that it's a question in the sense of when we say something, we're like, do you know what I mean? Do you understand? Are you with me? But I'll try not to do it so much. This is Abby Lincoln with Blackberry Blossoms.
gathered from the bramble bushes, growing, crawling on the ground. The bramble bushes and the berries climb the fences and the trees. The thorny bushes shelter berries and the snakes and bees. Brambles blossom into berries, promises of fruit in winter. In the summer, grow maturing just before the coming fall. Blackberry bramble in the springtime, in profusion on the wall. Without blossoms, there would be no berries here at all. Bring the blossoms in the spring.